Diego, and I'm here today with Jesse Stedman, my partner in crime on the road trip that we just took, 11 states, 6,000 miles, meeting with over 150 leaders from all over the western U.S.
What's up,
today,
guys?
We have found ourselves in San Diego, and we're connecting with a very good friend of mine, Ryan Sisson, who is the founder of the Moniker Group. And today we're going to talk about some really critical things concerning leadership, ministry, business, organization, and leadership. Ryan, let's talk through the topic of culture creation. It's something that, as you are now in your seventh year of really pioneering this company, culture is something that has taken a front seat as far as what it is that you're paying attention to. Why culture?
Yeah. Culture, two things. One, they say that culture eats strategy for breakfast. So it really doesn't matter, you know, all the planning and ideas and all these things that you have for your business. Like, culture is going to determine the direction in which you go. But also, your culture exists in your business or in your organization. Like, whether
whether you acknowledge it or not.
Yeah,
right?
It's there, you know, and it is, if it's not defined, it'll be created and established by the people that are part of it, whether it be good or bad. No matter what they bring into it, that's going to define the culture. And so the reality is that it's there, and it's, instead of pretending like it's not important or not around, it's better to really step into it and embrace it and use it to build the framework of why you exist and what people are being invited into.
So good. What's the what is the danger if you choose not to focus on it and invest in it?
The danger is really, like, how do you lead something that's not defined? You know, what are you leading? You know, are you, you can, if you're not defining or investing in it, you can feel like you're establishing, or you feel like you're leading, or you feel like you're influencing it. But the reality is that the people that you're trying to lead through an organization are being impacted by the culture that they're creating on their own.
That's good.
And so you really need to have that as the ability to give yourself the foundation to stand on when you're bringing people into something.
It seems like culture becomes this thing that you have to focus on the minute you invite somebody else to partake in the thing that you started, right? Because that's the first, that's the moment when the existing culture, owned just by you or whoever is managing or planting or starting this thing, the potential for it to be influenced is divided in half, because mm-hmm. you're inviting somebody else in.
Yeah.
Right? So culture is something that you should start thinking about probably as you're going, but you really have to nail it as soon as you invite somebody else to the party, right?
Yeah. I mean, the more people you're bringing into the space, the more levels of impact that are going to be had by the people that are part of it. And what happens is your organization grows. You get people that are further away from the original founder or the core group of people, and they're on the peripheries. And if they're not invited into something from the beginning, they're going to even have a higher chance of creating their own culture that may be completely
right.
counterintuitive or
right.
counterproductive to what it is that you are at your core or what you stand for.
Yeah.
And so it's even more important that if you have people that are out there as the face or the interaction of your organization that are talking with people or interacting with people, that they know what it is that they stand for as an organization. And in that too, as a leader, you can both yourself and with others be held accountable to what the company stands for.
It gives people, like, I love what you said. You said it flattens the organization, right? It allows people the permission to come and ask you critical questions concerning what it is that you've set up as the leader, the values within the org, right?
Yeah, and it's like in discipline, you know, you can't just discipline someone for doing something wrong if they didn't know that it was wrong.
Perfect.
So you have to, as first, sit them down and say, hey, like, moving forward, like, this is an action or this is a decision or whatever you did that we won't tolerate.
Mm-hmm.
So after that, you can go back to that checkpoint and say, like, we had this conversation, you've been made
right.
aware,
right.
and that's why this decision is coming down. So if you don't have those values, what are you going back to?
Yeah.
You're just
opinion.
It's opinion.
Yeah. Just opinion.
Or it's implied. You're like, well, you know, we don't do that totally, kind of stuff.
But there's nowhere expressed.
I didn't know we didn't do that stuff, or like you didn't say we didn't, or so whatever good. It may be, you know, like you have to have that place in which you can go back to and establish, hey, this is what we stand for and this is what we do and this is how we do it. Otherwise, what are you like bringing, like inviting people into?
Yeah. At face value, it sounds harsh, but it really is the best thing you can do for whatever it is that you're trying to create. If you don't set check marks and guardrails, and if you don't set an expectation for how you want this thing to live on as it grows, you're almost doing your vision a disservice.
Yeah. I mean, we have the Bible, right? What is it? It's a lot of stories and checkpoints and balances and ways in which we are being called and created to interact with others. And if we didn't have that, and we see what life can look like when that is not a part
when
of it.
When there isn't a rudder of...
Yeah, there's just, yeah. It's just whatever someone feels like in the moment.
Yeah,
like
that's goes. Great. That's great.
And you might be able to exist, but you're not going to thrive. And I think that's the biggest piece is like, the organization needs those guidelines to thrive in the calling that it's been like set out to fulfill. They're not boundaries, they're guidelines.
Yeah, that's good.
You know, like it keeps people focused. It keeps you focused as a leader.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think some people can look at it as like, oh, this is so restricting or whoa, but really unlimited space doesn't foster innovation and creativity in the first place.
And growth, yeah.
You know? Yeah, it allows you to kind of go in a million different directions. If you just went into the gym every day and just lifted on a different weight, there's 400 machines. Like, you're never going to grow. You have to have a plan. You have to have guidelines. You're like, I'm going to focus on this tier. I'm going to focus on this here. And it allows you...
In different seasons, right? And in different moments, you're going to focus on different things.
Yeah, and I think that's really what these kind of values and defining your culture is it allows you to exist inside that space. And the other big thing too, I think the world, we're just so bombarded with information, ideas, thoughts, opinions, like just comments from people can throw you amok. And if you don't have like that established values, it can be easy to question what it is that you're doing and why you're doing it.
So powerful.
And I think it's easy to get off track, even just on your own, where you're like, wow, why are we here? Or is this even worth it? You know, but if you can go back to that, those elements that define the culture of your business and go, nope, like we're doing this for people.
This is the why behind the what.
That person's opinion is an opinion, but you know, we're going to keep going because I know why we're here.
Good.
It helps you stay. And that rudder, like you said, you know, it doesn't just keep you going a certain direction, but it also keeps you afloat and keeps you balanced.
Yeah, that's powerful.
And I think that's a huge part of that people overlook.
Now, this is crazy because I'm guessing that there are so many people that they are probably in the genesis of an organization or an idea or a group or a collective or a whatever. And they're listening to the conversation and they're going, wait, but do I need to be that strict or that... like, do I need to start focusing on culture now? Do I need to start declaring those things now? What would you say to that person?
I would say that the culture is happening now.
Okay.
Already.
Okay.
As soon as you start something, there's culture.
Hmm.
Right? That's the thing, is it's not a matter of whether or not you choose to like focus on it.
Yeah.
It's still going to exist.
It's growing and so forming.
So it's your choice to whether you want to define it out of the gates or if you want to wait for it to become a problem, which is what happens with a lot of businesses. It's like, man, our culture is so off. Let's hire a consultant to come in and talk to our executive team.
Right, right.
And then you're trying to shove culture from the executive team down, which a lot of times is completely out of touch.
Yeah, it's upside
down.
With
the
right?
actual like people that are part of your business. And so that's why it's vital to start early on.
Yeah.
Like establish, especially if you're the visionary entrepreneur and you have this vision for a business, it's like, who do you want the people to be there? Like we use our values to hire people.
Okay.
Right? Like we use them as guidelines to make sure that the staff that we get fits within what we're trying to represent as a business.
Mm.
You know, it's a way in which we'll guide your hiring, guide your business expansion, guide the decisions that you're making.
Okay, yeah.
Like everything that's in
it. It, what you're saying then, if I can sum it up, is that it runs deeper than you pay it to, than you're aware of. Like culture is like this silent rudder in the organization.
It can be. Okay. It is in most of them, unless you like bring it to the surface.
And you bring it to the surface and you manage it well.
Yeah, and you're like, this is it.
Right. I heard somebody say one time that culture isn't, especially leadership in the topic of culture, it isn't so much sometimes what you enforce, but a lot of times what you tolerate. So the things that you just let run its mm-hmm. course in your organization sometimes can be even more... it can speak more volumes than to what you're trying to lay down by way of policy or by way of value in a company. Have you experienced that as a leader yourself where you go, man, I'm looking backwards and I've tolerated a lot and maybe I should have like wrapped my arms around that earlier.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think one of the coolest parts about it is we unveiled our values, like really put them out to the company like 2 months ago, uh-huh. three, this is pretty recent.
Yeah. Which is why we're having this conversation.
Yeah, and so went through the whole process with a consultant to build them and really just put them out there and introduce them to the whole team. Well, one of the guys that works for us came and pulled me and another one of my managers aside and was like, hey, like I haven't gotten the time like for, I need a review. Like you guys said that we would be doing this like 90-day review.
Right.
And, you know, I haven't had it yet. And I just, one of our values is professionalism. He's like, and it really doesn't feel very professional that you guys have said this.
And you got and, checked.
Like, we got checked by our employee. And that was like the raddest thing.
Did that frustrate you?
No, or it was awesome.
You were encouraged.
I was super encouraged because we're not perfect. Like as leaders, we're not here like going like everything we do is perfect and like just like submit to what we're saying. Right.
What you're saying is it's even like, at the management level or even in the higher up level, you're still in a process of learning.
And also just the fact that here's someone who's embraced the values, saw a gap in how they're being represented internally, and then brought that back. I would much rather an employee come to me or one of our managers that is there's a miss and use our values rather than just be like, hey man, why don't you do this? Right. Blah blah blah.
I'm
like
super upset.
No, like this is what we stand for, and this is how I'm seeing it at work. And it was awesome, and I loved it, and it was a great learning opportunity for us.
There's a lot of people who listen in who operate within ministries, so I think that even the idea of creating a value system within a ministry could be so valuable. It could keep you on track to say, these are the things that we want. Because a lot of times we just, as the leaders of whatever it is that we find ourselves engaged in, we can have that in our heart and then hope that other people see it, that they hear it, right? Andy Stanley says, right, you speak vision over and over and over again. But to have a document that people have almost at their... you know, beck and call, they can go back to it. And it says like, you're allowed to check me on these things also it could be one of the best things that you could introduce or you could elevate, recognize in your org. Well,
it creates a lot flatter organization, right? There's access, like the person who's working for us feels like they have a voice in it. That's and great. They should have a voice in it. This isn't about what I say goes. This is a team effort. My role doesn't exist without the people that are part
That's
of
good.
It. And so if they were to leave because it wasn't right or they weren't being treated well, there weren't like, what would we have?
Yeah.
We just, really good. And so we'd have me standing there with a page of their core values with no one to lead with it, you know? And so what we do, is we have every other week we have an all staff meeting. And, at the end of that meeting, we do a very efficient, like quick 45-minute, like company update, manager updates, just a communication. I mean, that's one of the things we learned through the whole process too, is people were like, what's going on? I want to hear more.
People
I want
to
know
be informed.
More.
Yeah.
We did a whole culture survey and everything too. We could get into that if we needed to, but I have everyone, we have, you know, 15 of us in that staff meeting. And, we have, each, like someone goes around and reads each value out loud every single time. Mm. And the description that goes with it. And then we spend like 10 minutes going, have you seen these values?
Identifying it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what's awesome is that it's reinforcing what we stand for, right? On all these different, because we have such a versatile business.
Right.
We have so many different types of people and types of areas that they exist. We get a really like well-rounded like viewpoint of what we stand for.
That's good. And it keeps you in line.
Yeah, it does. And it reminds people of almost even looking out for the opportunities to show where the values
That's
have been
great.
Reinforced. And also indirectly, it opened a huge door for people to actually like lift other people up. Like, hey, Mingo, it like, was so rad the other day. Like, people. You were at the store, and I saw you talking to that other guy and helping him with his project.
Yeah.
And I just, that was empowerment. Like, empowerment's one of our values. I saw that in work, and it was just really cool. So now we have all of a sudden this community dialogue taking place amongst the whole team of people calling other people out for seeing the values.
Yeah, you're actually creating a culture of celebration, which reinforces the core values anyways.
Yep.
Yeah, it's so good.
Yep.
Let's talk about marketplace ministry, because that is a... It's a place I think that the church wants to go. I don't think they know how necessarily to navigate it. And I think that you've got a pretty basic view of it, one that's pretty digestible. Help me unpack what you would define as marketplace ministry and how are you seeing people do it well?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, most of my marketplace ministry like mindset has been framed between these conversations between you and me. Mm. So it's been fun to see it take place. You know, my background... I grew up in a church. I grew up, I remember as a kid always wanting more from like what the ministries at the church offered and how I could get connected with people. Right. You know, it was always like, man, it's so cool that other church has like a cool surf ministry or a cool youth ministry and they're doing all this stuff. And it just always felt like really silo. And, as I started leading more and getting into the young adult ministry at a big church here in San Diego and helping like lay lead that for years and helping grow that. And then that's where we got connected and really began to see that there doesn't really need to be a separation between the church and what's happening like in the community, right?
In your marketplace. Everyday normal day life.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it should influence the way and the decisions we make and how we approach things, but you know, we don't have to sacrifice quality or entertainment for the fact that we're part of the church. You know, and I think there's like this mindset that most churches or a lot of churches have where it's like, it just needs to be churchy.
Yeah.
And it's like, why is the church, it was really this question of like, why has the church not created something that the community wants to engage in beyond just like a Sunday morning service? Mm-hmm. And that's where our first real like big like head first dive into that was when we did our first fashion and art show.
Yeah.
We called it Intelligent Design. We took over a loft in downtown. We had local designers and artists and fashion brands. Some might have been believers, some not, you know. But we just did a show. We just had fun, and it was cool, and it was, and we had I think 300 plus people there, and it was standing room only, and it was like, oh my gosh, here it is. Like, this is literally like an expression of ministry in the community.
Yeah, it absolutely can. You have permission to do something that everybody loves, or really it was reflective of the community that you were part of.
Yeah.
So gathering people, urban setting, downtown, fashion, art, design, you know, I think that what sets it aside is really to be given permission to allow what you believe to merge and to kind of permeate the things that you love.
Yeah.
If like that sounds so basic, but at the end of the day, if you can find ways to intersect what you believe with the things that you love, whatever those things are, it could be surfing, it could be the place that you work or the people that you do life with. If you can find a way to merge those two and say, like, collectively, we love Jesus, and it doesn't have to be preachy or overtly Christian. Mm-hmm. I think that it is the expression of the people that make up whatever it is doing, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think that it's just shaping the narrative of what a Christian is able to create and why they're willing to create it.
So excellent.
You know, like it's just, you know, why does church stuff have to be lame? Like no one can give me a valid answer for
that. Well, that question is usually the propeller to things getting good. So the question is, are there people inside of an organization that are asking, can it be better?
Yeah.
Right. And are those people, if they're asking, can it be better? Are they being reprimanded for asking that question?
Well, I think what happens is there needs to be a mindset in the church, because right now, most often times when things are not successful in the community from an outreach standpoint, when people's giftings are not maximized or they're not even given a platform to be able to create, it's because the church is looking up for itself, right? It doesn't want to offend someone, doesn't want to break a rule. It wants to make sure people come to church. It wants to make sure people give. It wants to make sure they hear the name Jesus over and over and over again. And like, it's not that those are bad things, but you're alienating yourself from the community, right? The community almost tolerates your presence for a certain period of time on a day, whether it's an outreach thing or whatever, or if they can get something fun out of it. Instead of the church going, hey, what's the community need? Like,
they just declare, this is what you should get.
No, we don't need you to come. We don't need you to give.
Yeah.
We don't need you to give your life to Jesus right now. We don't need anything from you. But, you know, Jesus called us to go and serve.
Yeah.
And so, like, how do we serve you guys?
Yeah.
Is it creating, like, a really awesome music and art venue on a weekly basis?
Right.
For some people, it is.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of people that are just looking for places to connect in the community and, like, be with other people and be inspired. Like, the community needs that.
Yeah, that's good.
So, like, I think that's the biggest thing is, like, when is the church going to just go, you know what, I'm tired and exhausted from just trying to get people to come on Sundays. Let's just go and, like, create really cool stuff in the city and just see what happens.
That seems like a great pressure release, too. I know that for me, when I was given permission to just go figure it out, I think that that's when I experienced the best kind of unique community serving ministry. My target was young adults. So, you know, a place to connect, a place to be that was not a place that people were going to, you know, find themselves in trouble at 2 o'clock in the morning was the channel that we were serving. Years later, we would put churches in places that people least expected it. So, I agree with you. What do we do, as leaders? Now we're in our, you know, mid 30s. Here we are. How in the world that happened? What do we do with the transition between people who have been there and kind of gotten a little safe, right? I think that we're still in a season where we're more dangerous than we are safe, but certainly there are young kids behind us that are way more reckless than we are. What are some of the dangers as we get older and we, you know, we become wiser so we risk less? What are some of the dangers in being a leader who is taking less risk? What would you say to a middle-aged pioneer with a bunch of kids who are like, I want to do stuff too?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, the danger is repeating the very things that we worked so hard to get out of, right?
Come on. Yeah.
It's like if we spent all that time and energy and resources, relational capital, actual capital to like do this cool stuff and really invest in the community, and then we just get like kind of afraid, then we just go right back to where things were. We just build another like big
church. You build another broken system.
Yeah. So I think, you know, it's the same thing with like faith, like your personal faith, right? If you just like, you could be super ambitious. I mean, we could go back and talk the last 7 years and the faith journeys that we've been on to get to where we're sitting right like today, right? Mm-hmm. And if you and I were like, man, that was fun 7 years. I'm tired. I'm just going to coast. And like in our faith, then our faith becomes stagnant.
Yeah, that's good.
Like, where are we going to? It just is like, cool, like comfort zone.
Right.
I'm going to just settle into a nice little 3-bedroom, you know, 2-bathroom house with a couple kids and a dog.
Relish in what used to be.
Yeah, and just like share fun stories about the past, you know? But like our faith has that same thing where if we just let it kind of coast and we don't continue to pour into it and push what it is, it'll become stale too. And honestly, people won't gravitate towards that. Mm. And I think you could look at the same with the church. If we don't continue to push into culture and push into our community, they just become stale and old.
That's such a good parallel. I love that parallel. I think what you said about the fact that, you know, we can push to a certain extent and then we can choose to stop. I think that the question is, or the maybe the point that I'm trying to make is, you learn and you get beat up along the road as you pioneered so many things. What I'm hoping is that I can be a part of a generation that doesn't just support and propel the next generation forward, but somehow we can share the, you know, the places where we found the potholes and the barriers and say, like, in 2 months, you're going to experience this as it blows up. And if you can just to the left or to the right, well, you know,
just think about like a relay race and track, right?
Yep.
The guy that when you're passing baton, you're passing it while running. You're not
at
passing
full speed.
It. Yeah, you're not passing it while you didn't run to a spot and then stop and go, okay, your turn. The guy like starts running. You know, he's running, you're running, and you pass it and then goes and they're picking up from
there. That's good. That's good.
And I think that's the reality of where we're at if we look at the generation that's coming up behind us, is like we should be passing baton at full speed.
Ooh,
you know,
just
like
unpack that like, for a second. The idea that you don't wait for your time to come to a you're not going to bell curve this thing. And on the downslope, you go, okay, maybe it's time to pass it. At full speed, you should be looking for the guy who's pacing with you.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, think, you know, look at the kids and like the legacy you're leaving to your kids, right? What, how are they impacted by your stories versus your actions?
That's good.
Right? Like stories can have influence. Man, yeah. You know, bravery. Let me tell you about this cool thing that we did when I was like in my 20s. And it's like, oh, that's really cool. Like, here's some photos or video.
But what or now?
What if he's freaking on a road trip with you for 7 weeks, like meeting church leaders all over the country, like hearing their stories?
Yeah, that's great.
Which one has like more influence? Yeah. And I think that's what we have to keep in mind is like, we're like asking this next generation to follow us, but what are they following us into? Like a place of like story time, or are they following us into a place of action? Woo. You know, Jesus didn't like come and just be like, all right, 12, like sit here. I'm going to tell you about the Old Testament. let's just talk about Moses for a second. He's like, no, like come and follow me. Like, let's roll.
I love
like,
that. Just
freaking, you're stepping out of boats. We're going to heal people. We're going to do this.
And watch me do
it. And then he went.
Yeah.
And he's like, my time here. And that, and it was their turn. And they picked up a baton at full speed, and they went.
Yeah,
you know,
it convicts me to. It convicts me. It makes me think. Who am I telling you're going to go farther? Who am I telling you're going to? What we're doing right now is only going to be. It's going to be the floor. It'll be my ceiling, but it's going to be your floor. You know, and that I think is the critical difference in propelling the next generation instead of sitting with your arms crossed, going like, "Are they going to make it? Are they going to do as much as we did? Are they just as whatever as we are?"
Yeah,
you know, you really. The mark of a great leader is that you determine that your ceiling becomes the next leader's floor.
Yeah.
You know,
that. Yeah. It's, and that thing of it is that we picked the baton up from someone, like for us to have the platforms. Now, I don't want to like sit here and say that we're like we figured it out and everyone before us is blowing
of
it.
Not. Of course not.
But there are a lot of current leaders that have decided to like, kind of pack it in, like kind of coast off into the sunset, you know,
and
like,
and it's a shame because you want them in the circle, the conversation with you. Yeah.
Well, not to mention the fact that we're all getting to a place in our life where we actually have some like wisdom and knowledge to share.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like we might actually start making good decisions at this point instead of just like figuring out on the fly, you know,
I constantly love that.
Going with the improvise, adapt, overcome like mentality because we just don't know what we're doing. You know?
Honor you, John. We honor you.
Yeah. John. Shout out to John Allen.
One of the things that Jesse said, the silent producer here, and everybody's watching and they see Jesse.
What up?
Jesse said on the road trip, he said, there are no self-made men or women. And I love that because so many people love that. Like, I'm self-made. I got here. Nobody gave me a hand up. And Jesse, if you wouldn't mind jumping into the conversation, that whole concept came from a frustration of, I mean, where did that come up from? And what was the value behind it?
Yeah, I mean, it came up from a million different things. So one of them was just I'm fresh out of college. So I'm a young leader. I'm working at Saddleback Church with you. So we're there, young leader. And, you know, there's a certain amount of experience that sets you at a certain bar in the marketplace, in the church, just in work experience. Mm-hmm. And so I'm waiting to get to, you know, that level to where all of a sudden my voice has actual
merit.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. With certain people, that is. But then the other part of it was just over the course of my life, I've heard people say I'm a self-made man or self-made woman. This person is that. And I mean, you think about it, first of all, like just starting with the beginning biologically, no one is.
You arrive like, by two
so,
people's.
Yeah. So at the very beginning, you're not.
Yeah.
And then through everything you do, you're not. There's literally no such thing. And I think probably the biggest part of the frustration is for me with my generation, with, you know,
and Jesse's millennials,
22. Yeah, right. 22. Yeah. With millennials coming at it, we're trying to be our own people, mm-hmm. but there's entitlement that comes with that, and there's a lack of respect. There's a lack of looking to the generations before and say, thank you, because I'm on your shoulders
now.
Yeah,
that's good.
Because what it's going to do, what you guys were just talking about, is raising up a generation. We're not going to be able to do that for the next generation.
Well, and I wonder if it's a big pendulum swing, because what I don't experience typically is I don't experience somebody who is the guy who invested in me, he says, hey, I want you to pay attention to how I'm going to let you stand on my shoulders. And there's no pride in that statement, but it is a perspective shift where you go like, wow, thank you for sacrificing. Thank you for letting me get a vantage point that I couldn't get on my own. I think that because there was a lack of that in our world, we recognized it, although it was never said. Certainly, I want to be vocal about it to the generation that I'm allowing to stand on my own. I think that happens naturally. I mean, there are some like dictators that are like, I'd rather stand on your shoulders than let you stand on mine. I just think that we're in a season right now, though, where it's awesome to let somebody stand on your shoulders. You know, it means that there's going to be a longevity in the thing that you are passionate about beyond your investment.
Yeah.
You know,
and what's interesting is organizations last longer than people. Right, they have the ability to. Mm-hmm. You know, that we have companies that have been around for hundreds of years.
Yeah.
And so,
like Pinkberry.
Like Pinkberry.
That's immediately what came to my mind. Yeah.
Well. Yeah. Is that even around
anymore? Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, yogurt.
What's interesting is that. To piggyback off of yours is, yes, like there isn't a person, like there are countless people that I've sacrificed in order for me to be able to do what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
Both employees that have been willing to do what we need to in the very beginning to build something great.
Like remove tile floors.
Yeah. Like just like the stuff that they shouldn't even be doing at all.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Family, parents that let me, you know, to provide me with resources so that I, you know, and they allowed me to, you know, live at home longer than I should so I could take big risks on the business side with my finances.
That's good.
You know, like there's countless stuff, and that doesn't even include the whole like fact that like God like provides
sacrifice
all the opportunities that you have. Absolutely. So like to come through and be like, yeah, I'm self-made is just complete like, it doesn't mean anything. You know? And honestly, like, why do you want to be self-made? Like, I'd rather be community-made, to be honest with you. I'd rather do it together. I mean, it's interesting. I read an article about the founder of GoPro, and he had made a promise to one of his friends that kind of helped him out in the very
college
beginning.
College roommate.
Yeah, college roommate. If the, I can't remember what it was, like his company reached a certain valuation or something, he would give him like a percent or two. And he was like, cool. And he followed through it like last year. And the guy got like a $50 million check. And in that, he said that the only thing more fun than being successful is being successful with the people around you.
Quotable.
And I'm like, that's the truth right there. Yeah. Like, I'd rather celebrate with people than do it alone. Than, so it's like just way more fun than thinking that I'm like self-made. Yeah. But in that too, like I have a vision for something that I would say, I love the vision that God has given me for the company. And for our city and for the community, I can only get it so far. Like, why would I not want to set someone to take it up after me and take it further?
Or alongside of you throughout the process.
Yeah, I mean, preparing someone to go, hey, like, this is the idea of, like, I'm self-made, this is about me, and that, you know, the generation after me doesn't really matter. It's like, no, like, I'm going to get it to this point. Like, I want to make sure someone's ready to take it to that point. Because if my vision is really about, not about me, it's about others, then I should be preparing someone to get it to have larger impact on others than I'll ever be able to have.
Yeah. It doesn't, what it brings to my mind is that the vision that you have for the company, you cannot be exempt from that vision. So if you want the company to be all about other people's visions coming to fruition and being a collaborative based operating, you know, entity, what you can't do is you can't exempt yourself from those values. You have to be, you have to reflect those same things. So you have to invite people to the process, even at the highest level of of leadership.
Yeah, it's and that's an interesting process because one of our values is empowerment, right? So it's this idea of like, how do we invest in other people inside or outside the walls of our company? But another one's humility. And so it's just like, how do I make this about other people? Like, how do I elevate others and allow me to be where I need to be not make it about me? But in that process, one of the things that I've recently been just kind of struggling with and kind of like walking through is, especially with our structure, like we bring on all these new partners and new people, and we're like, this is ours, this is our collective, this is for you to like step into your calling and like really be about you. Like every time I do that, I give away a little bit of the vision, give away a little bit of the control.
Yeah.
And it's tough because it's something that like is so near and dear. Like it's, these are the desires that, and this that God put on my heart. Like yeah. these are,
you forged
this is the
them.
Vision that he like planted in my mm-hmm. mind. And like every time someone comes along, it's like giving a piece, but it's a really, I think, a rad reflection of like what God's calling us to.
Totally.
He's like, I gave that to you, not for you.
Yeah, yeah.
I gave that to you for others.
Yeah, that's good.
And that process of like dying to self and just being like, you know, this isn't about me. And then in that, he creates more space to instill more vision into
what you're doing. To give more of it away.
So you can give more of it away. And it's just that, like, you know, too much is given, much is required. It's there, that very thing, you know? He's making space for more of what he has in store. And he's infinite. So the more you're able to give away, he'll just continue to fill it up as long as you're ready to do it.
That's a great perspective. I got one more question, and I want to camp out in this topic for just a little bit, and then we'll close it down. I talk so often with people who have something in here. They're convicted in their heart about it, but the idea of getting it off the ground seems impossible, right? And I've had... conversations. Somebody wants to take a tour of the warehouse. if people want a tour of the warehouse, Ryan, can they contact you to tour the warehouse?
Yeah, you can email me.
Okay, perfect. What's your email address?
It's ryan@monarchygroup.com.
Boom. All right. Got you, Steve. When you do that, call me. So here's the question. I was on a road trip with Blake. He was our photographer, and he knows he's got Moniker in his scopes, and he goes, dude, I want to do a coffee shop one day. It'd be so awesome, man, but I could never do it because I don't have name the dollar amount, yeah. whatever it is. What do you tell somebody who's got something burning in their guts, but they're looking at what it takes to get it off the ground? What wisdom do you bring to the table concerning that process?
I mean, how bad do they want it?
Is that it? I mean,
I worked on Moniker for 6 years without getting a paycheck. You know,
I just want everybody listening to just sit in that.
Yeah.
You were working another job,
mm-hmm.
full time. You started paying other people first.
Yep.
They were receiving compensation for the thing that you were paying money into mm-hmm. to keep alive, right?
Yeah.
So just unpack that for me.
They say the best time to start something is when you have a job.
Okay.
You know, we have a line that around the company is that the dreams are free, but the hustle is sold separately.
Thank you.
And everyone's got an idea or mm-hmm. a dream, or they want to do something really cool. And it might be God-inspired, and it might just be selfish. Doesn't matter. But you got to be willing to work for it. I mean, I think that's the part that's missing out of a lot of, especially the generation that we exist in, the generation that's coming up behind
yeah, we're
us.
A part of it.
Just like, they just want it to happen. It's like, it doesn't just happen. Like
yeah.
you have to start doing it, and you have to be willing to sacrifice, and sometimes sacrifice huge amounts to be able to do it. I mean, for us to get to where we're at, like I put every single nickel and dime that I could possibly get
literally access to. Yeah.
There have been multiple times when there have been single digit dollars in both mine and the business bank account. Or I get a paycheck and I write it to the company so I can pay other people. And that's our story. Not everyone's story is going to be like that. But what it takes is just that willingness to hold on to the vision that you have
yeah.
and see it through. You know, our building of it, of building Moniker is so relationally driven, and the opportunities that come through those relationships. So I'd also say, like, just focus on just meeting and learning from as many people as you can, and understanding like where they've been in their story. Because a lot of times you need that story from others to keep you going.
That's good.
And I just recently read the autobiography of Phil Knight, the founder of Nike. And it was like the best book I've ever read. but I've been doing a lot of autobiographies. And there's a lot of like management books and all these strategy books, and they're awesome, they're great. But what you begin to realize is that all those books that you're reading that are coming out that feel like you have to read, none of those existed when people built like Nike.
They were experiencing it and then reflecting backwards on it. Yeah.
So these guys built without those tools. And I think it just was a reminder of like how much we can learn from other people's stories. And like what it takes to do something. Because you look at all these brands that we know now, and we just look at it as this big power thing.
Oh, yeah, there it is.
We have no idea what they went through to like start their companies.
Moniker existed in a trash and recycling bin at like area at one point. I think it was like where first starting. We were like, oh, we could do this.
Yeah.
It went to a closet in a business at one point, like this off random like storage room. It was in my backyard for a hot minute. It was in your parents' front yard for a few projects.
John's front yard.
Yeah.
For a full year, we had no home.
It's been it's had a nomadic season. I just think the important thing for young people to hear is that you don't have to have all the pieces before you start piecing it together.
Yeah, there's no, you're not going to have it. It's interesting. There's different like theories and conversations around it, but the amount of energy and amount of resource it takes from going from 99% to 100% is not worth the return that you get in that. Seth Godin talks about that a lot. He's a famous marketer and just thought leader. And sorry, my dog's like walking around somewhere.
It's all good. Yeah, it's all good. But what was he saying?
So just that reality of like what it takes to like create something, like you just need to go for it. It's never going to be perfect.
Yeah.
Just be willing to like
a perfectionist
start
in it.
And in that like starting, just know that it's going to be a lot of work to get there, but know that, I mean, for me, like moniker is not only such an expression of who I am and who I was created to be, but it is really one of the most viable expressions of my personal faith that I could possibly have.
I love that.
Right? Like on a regular basis, the amount of faith, like I tell people it's 25% hard work, 50% faith, and 25% pure ignorance that got us this far. We don't have to get into the ignorance part, but there's a certain amount of like thinking you could do anything and just going forward, even though you
bulletproofness.
Can't. Yeah. But that faith piece is it. And like, it is not only a reflection of my relationship with the Lord, but it also is so much empowered by Him. And when the times get to that place where you only have single dollars or you just, you literally can't make payroll and all of a sudden like the check comes in like multiple times that's happened.
Yeah.
You know, and we grow and we continue to push the limits and He continues to provide in those ways because it is from Him. You know?
That's good.
And, but to start something, you just got to go for it. You're not going to get the perfect opportunity, the perfect season, the perfect lineup, the perfect money, the perfect whatever. Just go and start creating something.
Start somehow.
Yeah. And then two, like just be ready, like, and be willing to put the work in. Like there's no such thing as overnight success. Like all the stories are 7-year overnight successes.
Yes, that's
like,
so good.
You just don't hear about them until they're like, you know, we have a store now and everyone's like, oh, Moniker's so cool. Oh, when'd you start it? It's like, yeah, like 7 years ago in a trash dumpster.
Like under tarps when it was like, raining.
It was raining and the only place that we could find a dry area was in a big giant trash enclosure.
Yeah.
That is literally, I mean, you talk about humble beginnings. Like, yeah. That was the humble beginning.
You do a great job of constantly bringing up where we began. And I think it's so necessary because people only look at it face value, right? It's like what social media does. You only see like a small frame of what is the entire lifespan of something.
Show the best and hide the rest.
Show the best, hide the rest. Don't build a company like that. And don't build a ministry like that either. I think that transparency is one of the biggest things our generation needs. They need to see the full scope of it, right? That's... Yeah. It's necessary for something healthy, for something to have a legitimacy in other people to understand what it took to get there.
Yeah.
You got somebody who just appreciates your candor. something's never going to be perfect, but the most important thing is to start. As I close this down, as we wrap into the 40-minute mark, what do you tell a young visionary who is sitting on the bench? You know, they see other people in the field. They see other people on the court. What do you tell that young visionary? What is the piece of wisdom that Ryan Sisson would deliver uniquely from your perspective of the ministry and also the marketplace, you know, provision that God's allowed you to have?
I would say that time is not your enemy, right? Like, I think that was one of the biggest things is you just always feel rushed. Oh, my gosh, I have this vision. And I need to do it right now. Like, I have to do it. And if it doesn't happen now, then it won't exist, you know? And yeah, there is an element of like, if it's time to go, like, you need to go. But if it's not time to go, you need to, like, just be in what it is that you're doing and, like, allow it to grow and become what it needs to be, you know? Like, that's, I think, Don't be discouraged by the fact that it isn't happening or there isn't time. You know, you think, I mean, I'm 34. That means Moniker started when I was 27. You know, I sit down with college kids all the time that are like freaking out, you know, like yeah. I went from college into real estate development, got laid off during the housing bubble, went through a year and a half unemployment, tried nonprofit work, went to like digital marketing. Like the journey that I had to get to where we're at is like all over the place. But what's really awesome is that in each one of those seasons, I learned something that's now being applied to what it is that God's like saying, hey, like this is where you're at. So you're on the bench, but there's a lot to learn.
Time is not your enemy. Pay attention to those who are on the court.
That's 100%. Like, I mean, you'll have your time, especially if it's something that God's put in your life. Like, just be willing to go, like, when he's ready for you to go.
I love it. Thank you so much for the conversation. If people want to follow your exploits or the company's exploits, how do they do that?
Instagram is probably the best place. So I'm just at Ryan Sisson and at Moniker Group. We have like 8 Instagram accounts, but just start at Moniker Group.
And then all the suggestions that follow beside it. You'll just see all the
different tags with different photos. But that's those awesome. are 2 really good ways to just find out what's going on. And yeah.
So good. Thank you, Sisson. I appreciate you. I'm certain this won't be our last conversation. If you're listening to this and you want to connect more, you can always go to Moniker General. Usually you'll find Ryan there or somewhere close by. They're in Liberty Station in San Diego. Excellent coffee, amazing waffles. Thank you, Joe Kraft. Just go and be inspired. I hope you guys were inspired on the podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in with us. We will talk to you guys soon.